we're in lesson 41 in the book of 1 Samuel. And I want you to turn to 1 Samuel chapter 18, and we're going to be picking up very quickly at verse number 19. So turn in your Bibles there and get ready. As you remember, Saul had said, okay, it's time for you to marry my daughter because that's the promise. But I want you to go out to fight this battle first. And so with time, David went off to be the commander of Saul's army. And in the meantime, the writer tells us of Saul's change of plans. And that's where we pick up here in verse number 19. So it came about at the time when Meribah, Saul's daughter, should have been given to David, that she was given to Adriel the Maholathite for a wife. Okay, the white writer did not tell us the details of Saul's marriage to Saul's daughter's marriage to David, but there must have been some plan. There had to be a date out there. So it came about the time is an indication that an agreement for the date of the marriage was already in play. There was a date out there. David had to go fight a battle, come back, we'll marry. But when the time came, Saul had a change of plans and had given his oldest daughter to Adriel instead. Okay, let's talk about this new son-in-law. The new son-in-law of Saul was that he was from the town of Mahlah. It was a town in the Jordan River Valley. It was located close to Beth Shean. We're going to hear about Beth Shean at the end of the book. It will one day be the home, the birthplace of Elisha. It's in the area of Issachar. It's going to be the home of Elisha. And Adriel was the son of Barzillai. Now, Barzillai is a wealthy man who is going to really love David. And he is going to support David when David's son, Absalom, tries to take the throne away from his father, David. So when David tries to take Barzillai along with him to keep him safe because of his goodness to David, Barzillai is going to decline, but he's going to say, because he is so very, very old at the time, he can't keep up. Adriel, the son of Barzillai, and Merab, the daughter of Saul, are going to have five sons. Now listen, I'm not going to tell you why, so you're going to have to hang on with us through 2 Samuel. But in 2 Samuel chapter 21, all five sons will be killed of Adriel and Merab are going to be killed on the first day of the barley harvest by the Gibeonites with the approval of King David. We'll cover the reason for their deaths when we arrive there in that chapter in 2 Samuel, so you're going to have to hang on with me. Meanwhile, because Adriel's father was a man of great wealth, Saul may have agreed to the marriage and therefore breaking the promise to David because of money. Always follow the money. So, Saul's broken promise puts Saul in a pickle. But then Saul learned that his youngest daughter has a fascination with David and loves David. And the writer tells us of the offer of Saul's youngest daughter in marriage as Saul's new plan. He's got a way out of this. Verse number 20. Now, Michal, Saul's daughter, loved David. When they told Saul, the thing was agreeable to him. And Saul thought, I will give her to him that she may become a snare to him and that the hand of the Philistines may be against him. Therefore, Saul said to David, for a second time, you may be my son-in-law today. This all happened on the day, okay? He's supposed to have married the other day, become his son-in-law. Nope, she's married to somebody else. Michal loves him. Saul says, okay, today you're supposed to marry my other daughter, but she's married to somebody else, so you can here be my son-in-law for a second time. So Saul is not speaking with David. David is with the troops defending the nation for the Philistines' attempt. In this passage, Saul's daughter let her love for David be known to him, and she perhaps unknowingly solves Saul's dilemma with his broken promise to David. For a second time, Saul could offer a wife to David to fulfill the promise as a victor over Goliath. Well, with the new plan in place, the secret message from Saul was sent to David, verse number 22. Then Saul commanded his servants, speak to David secretly, saying, behold, the king delights in you, and all his servants love you. Now, therefore, become the king's son-in-law, So Saul's servants spoke these words to David. Okay, it was a secret message to David. Secrets are rarely good, folks. David had already experienced the wrath of Saul several times, and he had also experienced the deception of Saul with the offer of Merab to be a wife. Now, David will be concerned about this offer. So the writer tells us David's concern about the marriage offer in verse 23b. But David said, "Is it trivial in your sight to become the king's son-in-law, since I am a poor man and lightly esteemed?" The servants of Saul reported to him according to these words which David spoke. David is concerned about becoming a son-in-law of the king, not because of his successes as a commander of Saul's army, but because he is still a poor man. This reply tells us that Saul has not fulfilled at least two of the promises of the reward for killing Goliath. Remember, Saul's offer was that the king would enrich the man who kills Goliath with great riches and will give his daughter to the man and let the father's house of the man be free in Israel. As yet, David does not have a daughter of Saul as a wife. In addition, we learn in this verse that Saul has not made David enriched at all. At this point, we can only wonder if Saul had granted David's family freedom at all of government requirements. I doubt he had. He's not kept any of the other two. It was not trivial in David's mind to become the son-in-law of the king. However, David nor his father, Jesse, have the money to become the son-in-law of the king. David was still poor and only lightly esteemed. In other words, David did not have the ability to pay the dowry required to become the son-in-law of the king. It is interesting that David feels this way. After all, would not the head of Goliath be a dowry enough to receive the promise of gifts as rewarded for the hand of Saul's daughter? Because that was promised for killing Goliath. Saul made the offer. Jesse, David's father, did not make the request for a daughter to be the wife of David, which would have been the proper way for it to happen. So why was a dowry needed in this situation? And David does not mention the need of a dowry, but Saul will in the next verse. David's reply from the battle camp back to Saul and Saul's hometown fell into Saul's purpose and thinking. The writer tells us of Saul's requirement in a dowry, verse number 25a. Saul then said, "Thus you shall say to David, the king does not desire any dowry except 100 foreskins of the Philistines to take vengeance on the king's enemies." All right. The head of Goliath was not enough. The victory over Goliath was not enough. A dowry was needed after all, but that was not part of the original deal. I do not know about you, but this type of bait and switch tactics goes all over me. When someone does something like this to me, I have learned to simply walk away from all business transactions with that person. I have learned from experience that anyone who is a bait and switcher cannot be trusted. In addition, the bait and switching will just continue and that person cannot ever be trusted. The deal is never the real deal. The end game is never the end game. The problem is never the problem. The reason is never the reason. The verse says that Saul did not want a dowry. No. Then he used the word except. That word means that there was the requirement of a dowry for Saul's daughter. Saul could not be trusted. He wanted 100 foreskins of the Philistines, and he already had the head of Goliath off the giant's body. Why this? Saul has a reason. The writer tells us Saul's reason for the plan of the foreskins of the Philistines. Verse 25b. Now Saul planned to make David fall by the hand of the Philistines. Saul had no intention of allowing David to marry his youngest daughter or his oldest daughter. He wanted David to be killed in his attempt to fulfill the required dowry for his daughter. Saul should have known better. David has the presence of the Lord in him, and the Lord's going to fight his battles for him. David was not going to be unsuccessful. The Lord would see to that. To ask David for such a thing as 100 foreskins of the Philistines was a welcome cost for the daughter of Saul, who had already expressed her love for David. The writer tells us of David's collection of the dowry in verse 26. When his servant told David these words, it pleased David to become the king's son-in-law. Before the days had expired, David rose up and went, he and his men, and struck down 200 men among the Philistines. Then David brought their foreskins, and they gave them in full number to the king, and that he might become the king's son-in-law. So Saul gave him Michal, his daughter, for a wife. Again I say, Saul should have known better. The request was easy for David. He collected these foreskins that day. And in fact, he collected twice as many as required. David delivered these fresh foreskins that day to Saul and collected his new wife in exchange. Saul was the loser. What I mean by that is that after Saul failed to obey the Lord departed from Saul, and Saul seems to have made losing decisions for the rest of his life. Every effort and decision to try to kill David by Saul had failed. The failures only enhanced Saul's thoughts about David. The writer tells us about David's fear, Saul's fear of David, in verse number 28. When Saul saw and knew that the Lord was with David, and that Michal, Saul's daughter, loved him, then Saul was even more afraid of David. Thus Saul was David's enemy continually. Saul should have known better. His decisions just made everything worse. Saul now had a son-in-law that he was afraid of and basically at war with. He had a daughter who truly loved David, as we will see. David was the enemy of Saul until Saul's death, but Saul was not the enemy of David. It was not in David's makeup to see Saul as an enemy. David will not dismiss the thoughts of Saul towards him. David will be careful about how he interacts with Saul, and David's thoughts of Saul will be godly. David will always do the right thing towards Saul, but Saul will continually be against David for the rest of David's life. Now, in the next year of life, David's new esteem will begin to grow. We hear that in verse number 30. Then the commanders of the Philistines went out to battle, and it happened, as often as they went out, that David behaved himself more wisely than all the servants of Saul. So his name was highly esteemed. Each time David and the men he commanded faced the Philistines trying to enter Israel for battle, David showed himself to be an expert in the art of war. With wisdom, with prudence, with execution, David rose to be the most successful of all the servants of Saul who commanded the other warriors of the king. To this, David's esteem grew great. In converse, Saul's esteem diminished. David is married to Michal, the daughter of King Saul. But Saul wants David dead, perhaps even more now than he did before the marriage. Just how long was David married to Michal is not known at this time. We can rightly surmise that the next story that the writer tells us is not right after the wedding. Perhaps many weeks later, if not months, or perhaps years, or two. Maybe it's only a week. The writer tells us a summary of the protection of David when Jonathan intercedes for David with Saul. Once again, as we had promised, Jonathan, who loved David and whom David loved, enters the storyline, chapter 19, verse number 1. Now Saul told Jonathan, his son, and all his servants to put David to death. But Jonathan, Saul's son, greatly delighted in David. So Jonathan told David, saying, "Saul, my father, is seeking to put you to death. Now therefore, please be on guard in the morning, and stay in a secret place and hide yourself. I will go out and stand beside my father in the field where you are, and I will speak with my father about you. If I find out anything, then I will tell you." Then Jonathan spoke well of David to Saul his father and said to him, "Do not let the king sin against his servant David, since he has not sinned against you, and since his deeds have been very beneficial to you. For he took his life in his own hand and struck the Philistines, and the Lord brought about a great deliverance for all Israel. You saw it and rejoiced. Why then will you sin against innocent blood by putting David to death without a cause?" Saul listened to the voice of Jonathan, and Saul vowed, "As the Lord lives, he shall not be put to death." Then Jonathan called David, and Jonathan told him all these words. And Jonathan brought David to Saul, and he was in his presence as formerly. You see, Jonathan had a plan to reconcile his father with David in harmony. To do so, Jonathan had to point blank accuse his father of sinning against David. Jonathan pointed out that it was Saul who was guilty and David who was innocent. His father was unjustly seeking harm on David when David did absolutely nothing to deserve the harm. You see, look at Jonathan's words to his father. "Father," he said, "you cannot sin against David because David has not sinned against you, and since his deeds have been very beneficial to you." Second, he said, "David took his life in his hands and struck the Philistine, and the Lord brought about a great deliverance for all of Israel. You saw it and you rejoiced." Third, he said to his father that he was sinning against innocent blood by putting David to death without a cause. In these three statements by Jonathan, I am reminded about three things that I have had to endure from evil people throughout my adult life. For decades, I have had sayings that fall right in line with the accusations of Jonathan to his father. In the first case, Jonathan's words were, "David has not sinned against you, and since his deeds have been very beneficial to you." Now, my words that I use is like this, it's much shorter. "No good deed goes unpunished." In the second case, Jonathan's words where David took his own life in his hands and struck the Philistines, and the Lord brought a great deliverance for all of Israel. "You saw it and rejoiced." Now my words, which I've said to many people in many emails and many letters and in many messages, is this: heroes are only heroes until people get jealous and sick of you being the hero. Even though it's unnatural. To the third case, Jonathan's words were, "Dad, you cannot sin against innocent blood by putting David to death without a cause." My words are these: people don't care and they don't need a cause to strike out when they're tired of a person's integrity and righteousness. Did you hear that? People don't need a cause to strike out when they are tired of a person's integrity and a person's righteousness. Remember, Jonathan was pointing his finger at Saul and calling him a sinner. The one without integrity, the unrighteous one. We've already discovered the nature of Saul in earlier lessons. He was not filled with the fruit of the Spirit. Rather, he was filled with the deeds of the flesh, which are all sinful. When a righteous person does righteous things for a sinful person, it will not long be before the righteousness is a stench in the nostrils of the sinners. According to the writer, Saul listened to Jonathan this time. Saul promised Jonathan that he would not put David to death. Short-lived, by the way. As the story goes, Jonathan retrieved David, returned him to Saul, where David picked up as Saul's musician, commander of the army, and armor bearer. Now, we must stop at this point to make an observation. Did the mere lecture from Jonathan change the thinking of Saul? Did Saul's promise assure David a safe life with Saul from now on? By now we have the history of Saul. We know his nature. He is not a man in harmony with the Lord. He is a man demon-possessed at times. He is filled with immorality, impurity, sensuality, idolatry, sorcery, enmity, strife, jealousy, outburst of anger, disputes, dissensions, factions, envy, drunkenness, carousing, and things like these. He is not like David, filled with love and joy, peace, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Saul cannot be trusted because he has not surrendered to the Lord and taken on a new nature. Looking at this, his history with David, David is in grave danger with Saul. I'm reminded of a lesson that I learned out at the Danbury Lodge Project Build that I led starting in 1999 through 2003. Now, the project started much earlier in 99 than when the men showed up in 2002 to do the build. But I was working on it the whole time. And I call this the mice and the snakes. As supplies became available for the build at really great prices, I purchased them, often long before they were actually needed, because we were having a little inflation at the time. Such was the case with the air conditioners and the heaters. The offer was made by a supplier who was selling the wholesale business, and I just could not pass up the deal, even though I did not need the units for another year. 20 pallets of supplies came in, and we stored them in the middle of what will be the dining room that's still under construction. The roof's on, no ceiling, no nothing. The wiring is not even in. Months later, when we were ready to install these air conditioning units, we began moving the pallets around the build site to the installation location, setting them where they were going to go. And to our surprise, under every pallet, not one was different. Under every pallet in that year, sitting out there with the doors open and everything else, no doors in some cases for a while, around the build site, under every pallet, there were mice living and there were snakes living together. Now, this shocked me. And one of the guys was a vet student at A&M, and he told us that was there, showed up for the day, by the way, on the right day, and he told us that mice and snakes live together a lot. He says, hey, you know, snakes need a meal once every 2 weeks. One mouse will do every 2 weeks. And he said, but remember, mice have to eat 10 to 20 times a day. So the snake sneaks into the mouse's habitat and just lays there quietly until it's hungry. It doesn't have to do anything. It's got meals running all the way around him. The mice come and go. They're crawling over the snake here and there doing their things. And when it's time for the snake to eat, he just waits for a mouse to come in front of him. And then he reaches out maybe an inch or two, and not very far. It doesn't disturb the scampering of any of the other mice, and it begins to ingest the mice. And as it starts in, it's a big old bulge at the head, and it gets smaller and smaller as it goes down the body of the snake. 2 weeks later, it does it again. The mice are so many there, they don't even notice that they're missing a brother or a sister. They have their own business to attend to. They need another meal. They're out just scampering around. The snake is the snake, and his nature will never change. And although he seems to live in harmony with the mice, he is not there to help the mice. He is there to eat the mice. So, too, it is the same with human snakes who come into our churches today. You would think all the snakes would live together in harmony with snakes, but that is not their nature. You see, good churches, you see them, they come into these good churches. They enter its fellowship. They lay in wait with the intention of devouring the old theology and bringing what they know and believe is against the Word of God. And they cannot be trusted because of their nature. Oh, you think they're okay. You're scampering across. They're just there. No. At the right time, they strike and devour. Saul cannot be trusted. But like this mice, doing the business assigned to them, Jonathan and David wanted to trust Saul, the snake. But his nature will soon break his promise. And so with that, the writer straightway moves to show the true nature of Saul. They're there together eating, and he writes how Saul attempts to kill David with a spear the second time, verse number 18. And when there was war again, David went out and fought with the Philistines and defeated them with great slaughter, so that they fled from before him. Now there was an evil spirit from the Lord on Saul as he was sitting in his house with his spear in his hand, and David was playing the harp with his hand. Saul tried to pin David to the wall with a spear, but he slipped away out of Saul's presence so that he struck the spear into the wall, and David fled and escaped by night. The Philistines had tried again to invade Israel, and David had taken command and repulsed the attempt. The victory stirred the true nature of Saul again, who attempted to kill David for being successful, to kill him with a spear this second time. This second attempt was foretold to us by the writer back in chapter 18, verse 11. Where did David go? He went home to his wife. But Saul suspected that David would go home to his wife, and that he did. And when David's wife heard the news, she was concerned. The writer tells us how Michal lets David down through a window with a plan to help her husband, whom she loves, to be safe from her evil father, King Saul.